Let's face it, getting older sucks. Getting older in the age of social media is even worse. Do you hate it when people tell you to age gracefully? Do you want to know how to live your best life at any age? Well, so do we. First rule, don't call me ma'am. Now, here's Jody Miller.
Hey, everybody. It's Jody Miller here with Don't Call Me Ma'am. Don't fucking call me ma'am. Today, I'm super excited. A really great friend on the show. I feel like every guest is a great friend of mine because why would I have somebody that I hate on the show? He is not only one of the funniest people I know, but one of the best looking. She's just looking at me when I'm saying that. No, he's like one of my favorite people. He's one of my favorite comics, one of my favorite people. He tours all over the world. He features for Rob Schneider, Joe Rogan. He headlines clubs all over the world. He's not even from the United States, people. It's like I shipped him in specifically just for this show. He's also one of my favorite people in the world to bitch about life with.
Yeah.
Put your hands together, everybody, right now, unless you're driving, for Monty Franklin.
Thank you. That's all I needed, actually.
Well, that's the show.
Yeah,
and we're done.
That's good. It's just you compliment people, make them feel good, and then I'm on my way.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You are sporting a fancy new mustache. What's going on there? That's very pedophile of you.
Do you like it, though?
I don't know.
I like it. Like, I know it's creepy, and I know that it scares children, but it's something that I enjoy on my face, and it's about my enjoyment.
Yeah, apparently, obviously.
I don't care about other people's fears related to the mustache.
To the mustache when people are clutching their children.
Yeah, old people holding their purses tight.
Yeah. They don't, yes.
I just like stroking it like out the front of the elementary schools.
Just like
quietly
that.
Quietly in
you
the bushes.
You can grow it a little longer and then twist it on the ends.
I had that for a while and it was too much.
It's too much now. It's too much now, actually.
Too much in a good way?
Define good.
I don't know. I like it. I like forgetting that I have it, and then I see my face, and I go, oh, that's right. I'm an idiot.
Right. Oh, you can actually see other people's faces, and they're like, oh.
Yeah.
But everything else is looking, like, on point.
Well, that's it. You try and make everything else look good, and then you just stuff it up.
How would I look with that thin pedophile mustache on my face?
Pretty good.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I probably should be... Maybe that'll be my thing, like when I'm on stage.
Imagine you had a proper good thick mustache and never said anything about it.
Never acknowledged
it. How many people do you think would say...
A girlfriend would say something to me.
Of course they would, but how many strangers, like you go to a store and get a sandwich, do you think someone's going to go, excuse me, you have a mustache?
Not in this day
ma'am,
and age.
And they call you that.
Oh my God, well that would be it. That would be the worst thing about it, not even the mustache. No, nobody can say that now. You can't say anything. No one's even allowed to ask your gender. You can't even say that. I'm not even asking. I'm just going to call you they right now. Like, I can't.
They? Like, I'm multiple.
You know, they call.
They? You just said that.
People that are pregnant now, some of them.
People that are pregnant. Surely you can say women that are pregnant.
No,
you don't have
to
say people.
I can't say that. You can't say that. But they refer to their babies as babies. No fucking joke.
Who
babies.
Do?
A friend of mine was at a dinner party and somebody was pregnant there. I don't want to say millennial, but there I said it. So millennial. And they were like, oh, do you know what you're having? And she's like, we do, but we're not. It's not a boy or a girl. And of course, my friend was like, what the fuck are you talking about? She's like, it's just a baby. It's a thing. Look it up. Baby.
That's disgusting.
I know. It makes me want to vomit. See, this is why I love you.
Do you know what I found out? Something disgusting this morning. Sorry.
No, tell me.
That I am a millennial.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't
know. Who told you this?
Well, I looked it up.
Well, how did you not know?
Because I was in first year, however
you're
you want to look at it. Yeah,
millennial.
I thought I was
yes.
Gen X.
No, I'm Gen X.
I want to be Gen X. I don't want to be associated with these selfie-taking,
filter-using. This is what I love about it. Everybody, in case you don't know, Monty has the same disdain for happy people as I do. So... So when we're really in a good mood and we want to just bitch about people.
Isn't it strange? Because we don't look like we should have disdain for
no.
it. But I really do.
I mean, we do deep down. But on the surface, we don't because, you have to put up pretenses to be a functioning human being. But I'm not talking
maybe that's
all the
just
time.
The comedian in us.
It is. It's the comedian in us. I do like happy people. Don't think because you're happy right now, you're like, well, fuck, Jody.
You know, I know, I'm like, jealous of you deep down.
Yes,
that's what it is.
This is what it
but
is.
I just I want to be, point out that, you know, you're not that good. We're all fucked. Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah, of course. Mm. Swear it up.
Fuck yeah. Sorry.
So, you know, what I find is interesting about you is I met you, you had only been out here less than a year. For everybody, if you haven't figured it out yet, Monty is from Russia.
Yeah. It's a small country in the southern hemisphere.
In case you couldn't hear his Russian accent. No, he's obviously from Australia. And he came to America because all Australians know that American women love to fuck Australian men. So that's why he was like, I'm going to come here and I'm just going to fuck a whole bunch of American women. Then I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll go, you know, to Canada because they also like to fuck Australian men.
Not just women. I'm open to all things now, 2019.
That's right.
Yeah.
They.
You I wanted to fuck they.
Okay. That's fine. All right. I can see that. What happened is he also happened to be funny. So while he was out here fucking they, he was like, I should probably
contracted.
Do comedy. No, I met you. How long were you out here when I met you? I met the improv that night, I remember.
Oof. I've been here 7 years.
It was probably like you were out here maybe. I think you were out here a year because.
You were one of the first people. You were they. You're a female?
I'm a woman.
Okay.
You're
one of the first
women
that I've met out here.
I think my mom had just passed. Either she had just passed.
Oh, did your mom pass?
Yeah, thanks. No, I think she had.
I'm allowed to laugh at that because my father left, so we have this bickering thing where Jody always...
But his father just left him, like, dude, I don't want this child. My mom died.
Well, she left too. She just really fucking left.
Yes,
at least my dad's somewhere.
But do you want to find him? If Monty's dad is listening right now... Call in. I mean, we won't be here because this isn't live, but try to call in anyway.
Just try.
Please. What if he like showed up and was like, son, I've been looking for you for years. Like I had amnesia and I found you.
Nah, that's too storybook.
I know.
It's not going to happen. And if it did, I'd probably go, well, you know, there's technology now. You could have done better than that.
It's true. All right. Well, forget it. It's not going to happen. He's gone. Just like my dead mom. So, yeah, it must have been about, because my mom would be, I think it's coming up on 7 years. I can't do math anymore. But what I find amazing about Monty, everyone, is you had a successful career in Australia as a comic already.
I can lie and say that, sure. I'd had done stuff for sure.
And then you came here and it was pretty much like,
no one gives a shit.
Right.
No one gave a shit. I couldn't even walk into the Laugh Factory. I remember that I came and said, oh, I'm a comedian from Australia.
Right.
And they said, okay, it's $20. And
Oh my God, really?
Oh, can I just watch at the back? And they wouldn't let me.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And then I had to, because I did. I had TV shows, had radio shows and stuff in Australia. I wasn't huge or anything, but I had done some stuff. And I had to put my ego to one side and really start from the beginning again.
It's hard.
And just start introducing myself to people and saying that I was a comedian. I still do that.
Yeah.
People
just,
still don't believe me.
They're just like, I don't know. Nobody with a mustache like that is a comedian.
No one who has that much disrespect for their face
is obviously a comedian. Fun fact, Monty Franklin is the first Australian comedian to get passed at the Comedy Store, the world famous Comedy Store, and get your name on the Comedy Store wall.
Dun, dun, dun.
It is. It's a big deal. It is a big deal considering you came out here 7 years ago. You couldn't even get into the Laugh Factory, and now you're a regular at all the clubs, including the Laugh Factory, and your name is on the Comedy Store wall, which is a great, great honor.
Yeah. I think Jim Jefferies is on there now.
He might be, but
I beat him.
You did.
Yeah. If anything, I'm doing far better than him, who plays arenas throughout the country. But
do you want to play an arena for real?
That sounds like a nightmare.
It's a lot of work.
People.
A lot of yelling.
There's stairs. There's probably stairs.
You're going to have to walk upstairs.
I don't have time for that.
Nobody has time for
mustache to work on.
You do. How long did that take you to grow?
I don't know. I kind of just leave my face for a while, and then I shave this bit off, and then I go, oh, look, there it is. I'm quite poor at maintaining my appearance.
Monty, because this is a podcast and you can't see him, but I hope you guys are all Googling right now, is one of those very good-looking men that doesn't have a problem making himself look unattractive. Not that you look unattractive, but remember you were on the first season of Rob Schneider's...
The Bachelor.
The Bachelor.
Rob Schneider's The Bachelor.
I was like, did he host The Bachelor? No, The Name of Michelle, which is on Netflix, which...
Real Rob.
Yeah, Real Rob. You were on an episode there, and for this episode, you had to become a homeless person, basically. You had to grow your hair out, all of that, and you just... That was, like, for real people. Like, if you... It was, like, real. Like, I was like,
yeah, dude. I played a homeless Ryan Gosling character.
It was great. It
so
was great.
He found a homeless guy on the street, and he cleans him up and pretends to his wife that he has brought Ryan Gosling to her party.
It's great.
They did a good job with all the makeup and stuff, but I did dress like a homeless person for a year before that.
I know, that's what I'm saying. In preparation, he grew his hair out.
Yeah. Your like facial, Daniel Day-Lewis.
You grew your facial hair out. Everyone was like, please shave that cat growing below your lip. And you're like, no.
It didn't even grow out like a nice hipster beard or something.
Actually,
it grew
no.
out like pubes
yes.
on my face.
But see, that's the whole thing. That's the, you know, the great thing. It worked.
It's the beauty.
It's the beauty of pube face, which I've never
old pube
coined.
Face, they call them.
No, but you do. You are committed. You don't even care about that shit. You don't care about that shit.
No, I don't.
How do you feel, though, about getting older?
I feel good about it.
Well, now that you know that you are a millennial, though, how do you feel about it?
I don't want to be associated with millennials. If I could somehow just be pushed up a couple of years and be Gen X, I'd be happy. But,
Are millennials as annoying in Australia as they are here? Sorry, millennials.
They're just really quiet and they've got too many emotions. Just calm down.
Well, that's also...
Just suck it up.
Don't you feel like that's more of like a cultural thing, like Americans just have too many emotions?
No, there's emotions flying around all around the world.
Oh, really?
Unless you're living in paradise in Indonesia and Bali and then you're just smiling the whole time.
I feel like a lot of
British, happy.
British people don't have emotions. They're emotional.
They keep them buried inside.
Yes, I mean, they're there.
That's a very British thing to do.
Exactly.
Don't show your emotions, have a cup of tea, and just push that down and then cry about it later when you're on the job.
Or just cry about it while you're eating Jack in the Box in your car.
But that's very... Australians took on a lot of those traits of English. So
that's
we
what
do,
I'm saying.
We do bottle stuff up a lot as opposed to being outwardly emotional, maybe, like Americans do. Australians will tend to just back it off and suck it up, and you can cry alone under a tree,
which I've
in
seen
the bush.
You, you also, though, well, you grew up with, you know, two sisters and a mom, single mom. So I feel like that definitely softened you. I feel like you're kind of an emotional guy.
Yeah, I think so. I'm in touch with my emotions.
I mean, I plan on making you cry today.
If you could make me cry, I'd be very impressed because I can't remember the last time I cried. Yesterday at the Lion King? No.
No, really? You don't remember the last time you cried?
Yeah, when my grandma passed away probably 6 months ago. But that, I couldn't tell you when.
Oh. I'm sorry about your
grandma. But I don't... I would love to be a weekly crier.
I don't know if the other people in your life would enjoy that.
No, they don't need to know about it. I'll find a quiet place on the side of the 405.
With all of the other people?
Yeah.
I guarantee you, if people are sitting in traffic and I was just sitting in traffic, if you're just sitting in traffic in L.A., and if you drive in L.A., you're definitely sitting in traffic, at least every third car, somebody's probably crying in that car about something. Don't you feel like?
I've done that. Down the 405, when my cat died a couple of years ago.
Oh, we were going to talk about that.
That I was wailing, crying. I'm a grown man. I was wailing, going... like that, and I was driving past and people were looking at me and I didn't care, but from their perspective, I would have looked insane.
I'm sure you did look insane, but I don't care because, guys,
there was nothing I could do.
What makes me so happy and what I love, I think, the most about you is that you
fell in love with a cat.
This is a guy who's always had dogs. For all you guys out there, there's like, I'm just a dog guy. Like, I'm just fucking a dog guy. Like, if cats were more like dogs, then I would like cats.
You 35 were, years, dog guy.
Yeah,
in
dog
fact,
guy.
I actively campaigned against cats.
You did. You act. She
I
did.
I said they're shit. I said they jump on
yes,
you. They're edgy. They're arrogant.
Watch my comedy and judge me and my cat culture because I mouth kiss my cat.
Yeah.
He had judgment upon me. And then lo and behold, cut to like, you know, it was probably like 1 month after you got Hamilton. And yes, his cat's name is Hamilton. And I think you just texted me, actually. You texted me, and it was a picture of his face, and all you wrote was, I get it now. That's all you wrote, I get it now.
Fell in love with a cat.
Yeah, and that cat broke your heart.
Well, like I said, we keep emotions in, right?
Right.
And this is such a weird thing to say, but that was the first living creature that I have loved that much.
And
I have a girlfriend.
I just was going to say, and I'm sure you're
shout out to Chrissy. But I think she would even admit, like, because the cat got sick, and then I had to take care of the cat.
Yes.
And then along with that came the Florence Nightingale syndrome, mm-hmm. although I think that's reversed.
Right.
And taking care of something and it needing you so much. And I took care of this thing for 18 months every morning. It was an hour of pills and injection things and stuff, and same at night. And the attachment that I made to this human cat was incredible.
Yeah.
And I look at it at that he came into my life, obviously for a reason to teach me about love and the inevitable
pain of loss.
And
you think you would have felt that when your dad walked out for smokes and never came back? No,
you'd think so, wouldn't you? But tough skin at five. Go well, move on. Let's get a job. Let's do this.
Let's grow a mustache.
Grow a mustache. I got this. I'm the man of the house now.
You are.
I took it.
That was very sad. I was very sad about that. I remember when you called me up and you're like, is it weird that my cat has stopped eating and hasn't gone to the bathroom and is hiding behind the couch for several days? And I was like, oh, you need to go to the vet like immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you called me. I remember I was driving to the HaHa. No joke. I had to pull over. I was like, you need to pick up your cat.
You did.
Yes.
I had a spot at the Comedy Store, and I was thinking, oh, I'll go and do that. And then
no,
I'll come
I was
and
like,
you
no.
said go immediately.
When the cat hides, it's the end. So,
yeah.
But you did give that cat an extra, another amazing 8 months,
yeah.
9 months.
Yeah.
And then he passed, and I thought to myself, oh, we lost another one. Like, he's never going to come back to the cat side. Like, we lost him. But then, lo and behold, you get this brother-sister duo.
Well, how's this for insanity? This is how deep the cat insanity has gone for those who yeah. think that you can't fall in love with a feline.
Yeah, okay, good.
So the day that Hamilton passed away, Chrissy, my girlfriend, had been looking at an Instagram page called Ragdolls something or other. He was a ragdoll, Hamilton was. And the cat had just given birth on the day that Hamilton died.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. And so we assumed in our insanity that it was our cat reincarnated in these two kittens. And so we flew all the way to Iowa.
Yes.
And bought these cats and brought them home on a plane.
Yeah.
Cost a goddamn fortune. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And we brought them back. But I swear to God, these two cats are the two spirit
Of Hamilton.
The one of them is the boy, Sergeant Peppers, is a terror and runs around the house and is a natural comedian and just the funniest thing ever. And then Prudence, his sister, is the prettiest princess on the planet. And Hamilton was a very good looking comedian.
Yeah.
of
but
a
also kind of a princess.
Yeah.
I swear to God, when I first saw the two kittens, they resemble you and Chrissy. It's disgusting. It's like gross. Like,
well, it's true.
It kind of looks like
I'm
you.
I'm the beautiful princess, obviously.
Right, obviously.
Mm.
and she's the
Chrissy's
funny one.
The mess of a tornado comedian running around the house, shitting on the rug. She needs to learn.
She does. She really does. I've been meaning to talk to her about that.
Just let her. She'll figure it out on her own.
So now you're dating, and she's a lot younger than you, right?
She's five, but too far?
No, you have the mustache already. I don't know why you wouldn't just embrace the entire lifestyle.
Five was aggressively young, though.
I was waiting for, like, years younger. I was like, wait a minute, I feel like she's...
Nope, that's it.
Just five.
Yeah.
And everybody just turns off the podcast now.
She's 6 years younger than me, yeah.
Right. Mm. So she's, well, she's definitely a millennial.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she's not annoying.
No, she's not at all.
She's got her annoying traits. That's where I get a lot of humor for my stand-up from. I got a whole new 20 minutes on her stupidity right now.
Do you?
That sounds aggressive from me, doesn't it?
I know, it really sounds aggressive.
Oh, I'm really angry.
Wow, this is going to turn into a counseling session in a minute.
No, it's funny. I mean, you know what I realized is I tried for a while, and you probably saw me do it because I was trying political angles, and I thought, oh, people want politics, and people want me to talk about these hard... No, they don't.
Yeah, but why would you think that? I always wonder why people say that if I'm coaching a comic. They're like, I feel like I should be talking about this, and I'm like, well, is that, like, do you sit around thinking about politics and the state of the
no,
world?
No, I hate politics and I couldn't give a shit.
So then why did you think that you should do it? Just wondering.
I think you get these ideas in your head that that there's a bunch of people making decisions in suits, in buildings, in Burbank, and you think that they want certain things.
Yes.
And they want an intelligent angle on this new, and there's all these news programs out there that are attacking Trump and this and that, and you think, oh, that's what you need to be doing. And I tried for a while, and the thing is when you get on stage and talk about stuff that you don't give a shit about, it comes across like that, and the audience sit there and don't give a shit about it.
The audience is super perceptive. I think comics, it's a huge misconception. Comics believe that the audience just come and they're just going to laugh. If it's funny, it's, you know what I mean? They're just going to laugh at that. And they forget that if you're not connected to what you're saying, the audience can see it. It's inauthentic. It comes across as something that you don't give a shit about. You just said it perfectly.
Isn't it funny that the audience can even tell when you're lying about a story a little bit.
Oh, my God. I've always said that. Do you know how many comics I would see that would come up and they would talk about like, oh, and then my son said blah, 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 blah. And I'd come off and I'd be like, I didn't know you had a kid. And she's like, I don't. I just think that's like really funny to talk about. I'm like, no, bitch, you have to fucking wait until you have a kid to do kid humor.
People can smell it. They can
smell it.
I reckon people can even tell when you change the name of someone in your story. Don't you reckon every time I watch John Mulaney and he says, I went to high school with this girl called Tegan Smith, and you know her name was Tegan Smith, and it makes it so much funnier.
Right.
Because you know he's not making it up.
Right. You're not going to be like John Doe.
Yeah.
Or John Snow.
Snowden.
I believe you're absolutely right. I try to not ever do anything that's not factual in my set. I mean, why would I? Our lives are funny enough. But yeah, for you to talk about politics, I mean, I don't see that.
I don't care about it.
So then don't do it.
I've even tried to follow the news, and I get CNN emails every morning, and they're really simple to read, and I get bored as shit reading them. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I don't care about politics of the world and what's happening in Sudan right now. But should I? Should I care? Am I an awful person?
Sir, somebody right now is saying yes.
Probably.
Yes to all of it.
Well, I don't care about that.
See,
you're offended by that
don't
either,
you feel
to
like
be honest.
The older you get, the less you stop giving a shit. I mean, I feel like some guys, you know, don't give a shit about shit anyway. Girls mainly care about shit. But shit. It's a lot of shit. I said shit.
Well, it's weird because you still give a shit. You still want audiences to like you. You still want to look. I mean, I've got a mustache on, but I don't want to look like a piece of shit. I still wear a half decent costume. That's what I call my clothes. Costume.
Well, what are you pretending to be today then in this costume?
A 14-year-old skater, obviously.
I love it.
These are brand new.
Look
at that.
Those are really good. Really good snakes. Kicks. Kicks, I think the kids call them.
Do they? The millennials?
I don't know what they call them.
Stupid shit.
I'm Gen X. I don't know what you're talking about.
What's the problem with your generation?
What do you mean, what's the problem with my generation? What the fuck does that
mean? Everyone's got a problem.
Oh, what is my generation?
Yeah, I know. You guys are shitty at the baby boomers because they took all the property and you guys can't buy houses. Is that what it is?
Well, no. I mean, I think we were called the lazy generation. I think the last time I looked it up, Gen X is the lazy generation.
Sounds like a lazy thing.
It's so lazy. We're so lazy we can't even come up. No, yes, I didn't even look it up properly. But the millennials are the entitled generation, right? Or is that the generation now, which is Gen Y? That's the kids now that are in their early 20s now are Gen Y.
Why are they entitled? I think they're in the...
They might not. They might be not the entitled. Up. I think it's millennials entitled.
Millennials
and Gen X are considered the lazy generation because when my generation was coming up is when video games became really big. The Nintendos, all of that, Xboxes, all that
okay.
stuff.
So productivity around the world just plummeted.
Well, yeah, MTV, VH1, like it was television, it was videos, it was watching those shows, reality shows, the real world, all of that stuff started happening. We just became lazy, but...
I think that's unfair that you guys got lazy labeled on you because the baby boomers just got everything handed to them because the generation before them worked their asses off and went to war and built a country and then handed everyone property and land and now they're sitting on these million-dollar properties that they bought for $100,000.
Not my parents. I mean, my dad has a nice little spread, but my mom's dead, Monty.
Oh, is your mom dead?
She's dead. Did your dad leave?
Ladies and gentlemen, Jody Miller with the My Mom's Dead podcast.
Here we go.
And here we go.
And here we go. I only bring people on who've lost a parent, specifically a mother. It's uplifting. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the Dead Parent Podcast.
Do you have a dead parent? Call me up. I want to talk about it. Let's have a seance and talk to my mom. Mom, you're a baby boomer. What do you think about this?
Mom, why did you leave when you had such a...
promising life ahead of you. Mm. It is true. I think that is like why we are the lazy generation. And thinking about it, there's definitely aspects of it. You know what's interesting is because I definitely worked hard. I'm definitely... And all of my friends worked really hard, too. I worked so hard that now... And I've brought this up other times, but it's like, and it's interesting because your girlfriend happens to be, you know, she's an influencer and she has a big social media following. So she works at that. She definitely works at that.
Yeah. I hate that word influencer though.
I know. I do too. But I mean, like, she's a lot of other things, but I'm only using that so people understand that, like, when you are in that category because you do things, you're sort of like obligated to, you know, continue to... post things and keep your fans, you know, interested.
Keep the facade up.
I mean, a lot of it
is
facade.
It's all a facade.
Most of it is. But I mean, like, you know, I'll talk to other people that, you know, have huge, you know, followings. And it's like they feel the need to constantly be posting stories and posts and keep them engaged. Where I can go several days, even though I shouldn't. Even though you and I should be posting.
I hate it.
You hate it.
I have to put an alarm on my phone. I've got one every day at 2 o'clock.
I thought you said I have to put a llama on my phone.
Well, that too. I have to put wildlife on my phone. That has nothing to do with it. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
Thank you.
It's an Australian thing.
Yes, I had to... we're going to talk about emus in a second, so get ready for that. But wait, no, I had to... I used to have that Hootsuite. That's that app that you can just, like, set up. Like, it just blasts stuff for you, so you don't have to do it.
But you have to put the content in there.
You still have to do it. You have to sit down and do it, yeah.
Oh, man, it's too annoying.
For me, it's annoying.
Like, honestly, I get it hurts me to see how much Chris D'Elia is on his phone. But,
yes.
I mean, obviously it works. He sells out theaters as a result of it.
Yes.
But in my head to do
that.
And
he's also talented.
Well, yes, that too. And he's millennial.
But he embodies that total millennial, that total millennial, you know, as a lot of them do, where you're on the phone, they're constantly using that as a way to, take their career to the next level. I mean, Dane Cook started it with MySpace. He's the first person to use social media.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? To get like...
To sell out Madison Square Garden.
Exactly. I mean, it was
crazy.
A huge thing. Now, for me, it's like, when I first started, I was working the phones at Stand Up New York in New York City, and I was... People would fill out, you know, those little forms on the table, like, did you like the show tonight? Who was your favorite comedian? Or, you know, what would you like to see here? And I would volunteer, basically. I would work 4 or 5 hours and cold call these people on landlines, people. I would call them. So sometimes you got a busy signal and you just hang up and call back.
What? What
busy
the hell are you
signal.
About?
A busy signal.
What does that
busy.
Mean?
It means I couldn't get through. Because they were on the line. They didn't have like another line.
What line are you talking
about? It was too hard to explain to a millennial. But anyway, but then they pick up and I'd be like, hey, this is Jody from Stand Up New York. Do you want 2 free tickets to this weekend show? You try to get people out and in return, I would get 5 fucking minutes on stage. And I was like, yeah, this is amazing. So
you had to do that all day.
I did it. I mean, and have a
few hours or whatever.
A few hours a day. You volunteer your time, or you stand in, you know, in Times Square. You hand out flyers for open mics and stuff like that. I also went, like, you know, casting agency to casting agency. You just walk in New York, bringing your headshot and resume. So here's the thing. So I did that. I came out to LA. I did showcases. I did a one-woman show. I did mailings. I did huge mailings. I did whatever I could do to get shows and to get, you know, doing casting workshops, all of that. So by the time social media became such a huge thing as far as building your fan base. And the industry started, I mean, especially like the first time I heard a commercial agent say, how many followers does that person have? I was like, oh my God, are you fucking kidding me? You are casting something based on how many followers that person has.
Yeah, right.
You're booking someone based on how many followers that person has. And I think I felt my whole body just sort of collapse because I'm so tired from the 10 years prior I worked my, maybe
I feel
15
like...
years prior, I worked my fucking ass off. For me to sit there, and it is a business. This is a business, you know what I mean? And this is a part of the business. It's not just like, look, I'm having wine. It's like you have to.
Isn't that a hard feeling? I sometimes feel the same, that I've worked hard on a career as stand-up and everything when maybe when I started, I should have just started a YouTube page.
You could have,
and
yeah.
It would have been a completely different route. I kind of feel like maybe back in the 50s, I'd started a really good like radio career and then the television came out and you're like, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I always feel like I'm one step behind. Yeah, I feel like I'm one step behind.
Well, what's the next thing? Let's get on top of it.
Well, we should invent it.
I think we have to get on top of a millennial.
I have been on top of several millennials.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I have. I mean, you set me right up for that one.
Tell us about it.
No one recently, but I mean, there's
what
always,
about when you had those two?
Tonight.
You had two of them that were.
Yes.
I won't give too much detail.
Yes.
Or can I?
No.
No? Okay.
But
well, they knew each other, and it was very funny when they were both at the Comedy Store, and Jody was pointing them out, and. Oh, there was two.
But they know about
young
each
cubs.
Other. Yes, young cubs, young little cubs that
Miss
I've been.
Cougar here, swatting them around.
Nurturing
them
into
around.
Adulthood. Showing them how to care. I was carrying one in my mouth like the lion cares. And the other one I was swatting along like, you go ahead. We're going to catch up. And I'm just carrying the other
come
one
on,
to my cave.
Yeah.
Just drop him down.
It's amazing the strength she had
just,
in her neck.
You can just, I know. Just, I big. Hold up with my paw just like, you stop. You just stop moving.
Sit. Simba.
So, did you really see The Lion King or no?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I really wanted to love it.
That's what a lot of people said.
Well, I would like to see someone who had never seen the original, perhaps, and they may have just loved it.
Right.
But the problem is that the CGI was incredible. Like,
right.
The lines looked unreal. But the songs lacked some sort of gusto that the original one had.
You know why?
Like, I wanted to sit there and jump out of my seat and go, like,
because there's something different with animation. Animation makes you feel young and fun, and there's something
no, the actual songs.
It.
I reckon if you put them together, like, you listen to one after the
oh,
other.
Oh, you think they're not?
I think there's less background choruses
right.
and stuff like that. Like, there seemed more behind the music of the first one. Like, more instruments, more.
See, I didn't see the second one, so I can't judge. I'm just saying that. The way this Lion King looks, it almost looks like it's real, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it looks
oh,
real.
Incredible.
So now when you look at animation, though, there's something that you can do more with animation that you just, I feel like there's just a difference in that. It's like.
Well, you can make things over, like if they'd tried to make a big smiling lion, like
right.
that, you can in a cartoon.
Yes,
it's
and
a
it looks
cartoon,
great. And you
it
love
looks
it.
Fun, but if you did that with a real one,
doesn't
you go,
look right.
lions can't smile like that. This
exactly.
is ridiculous.
Exactly.
So they had to stay in the parameters of the real world.
Gross.
For God's sakes.
Disgusting.
But look, I want to go and see it again so I don't have this feeling inside me that I'm disappointed.
I'm just feeling that you should probably not go by yourself with a lot of kids around with that mustache and the Lion King.
I think I should. I think we should do it as a social experiment.
Just sitting in the back. Just sitting in the back and
quietly. Just biding my time in the dark.
With a little notebook writing.
Sketching.
Sketching.
Sketching the children around me.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Let's do that.
I'm working on my animation. No, you're not. You're drawing pictures of the kids in the cinema.
Just sitting there watching.
Am I?
I didn't even know I was doing that.
I'm sorry.
Just like a subconscious thing.
I don't know where this pad came from. So put your pants back on. I like to draw in the nude. Anyway, my court appearance will be coming up.
So can we talk about the Emu War, the Great Emu War?
Sure.
Because you are very close to starting to shoot a film.
A year away.
But that's close in this town for sure.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. So it's my first film.
I wrote it
with Rob Schneider. And we're going to be filming in Australia in August, September next year, 2020. And,
that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's going
to
be great.
You know how many steps you have to, like, it's so many, how many things you have to do to get to that place?
I know, but I'm still going through those steps, and every day I think it's not going to happen, and then I'm not sure. And everything's new to me. Every single thing that's happening now, I have no idea about. I get a call from the producer in Australia and they say, hey, the funds from the Screen West and the blah, blah, blah came through and we need to, and it may as well be German. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I'm like, great. What does that mean? What do I need to do? I don't know what's happening. All I know is that we're making a movie, and apparently everyone's very excited.
I think, because you also did a pilot, The Manny.
Uh-huh.
And then This Is Us came out.
So many people rang me when that happened.
I know. I refrained from doing that because I was like, I know.
Well, the funny thing is in This Is Us, The Manny, it's a joke. Like the guy did a joke sitcom life, and that was something I was trying to pursue.
Yes. He wrote a pilot. Monty wrote before This Is Us came out, and I know this because I saw several versions of it.
Oh, yeah.
And Jody, I was helped in the pilot, and I remember you had that long before, and then, of course, This Is Us comes up, and it is a total, obviously, for those of you who don't watch This Is Us, it is a sitcom. They're making fun of it.
Funny.
And you're like, oh, I was really...
It's like a joke sitcom that might have been done in the 90s called The Manny, where a man was the nanny of the house, and I actually tried to do that, and then it came out, and I went, nuts.
But having said that, you got the money and you shot it and you edited it and you did it. And that's also very
It's what led to this movie. So it's
that everything
nothing,
happens for a reason.
Exactly.
Do you believe that, though? Like, everything happens for a reason. Are you into spirituality?
Yes, but I also believe that your actions lead to the next thing as opposed to everything happens for a reason. There's a lot of people that sit in their bedrooms and go, I'll just wait for the spirits to bring me the things I need in life. And I go, get off your ass.
Yes.
You've got to go and do shit.
I believe that too.
And I do believe that if you're proactive and out there and doing stuff, more comes to you. What is that? The Secret.
The Secret.
That's the Oprah thing, right?
Well,
it is.
No, I don't think it's just Oprah. I think The Secret actually...
It's all about Oprah.
Oh, I forgot. It is all about Oprah.
If Oprah says something, it's hers and
that's
hers
right
alone.
I'm actually listening to a manifestation podcast now because my commute is so long. I think The Secret was the one that, you know, was on the, you know, it was just the first one to come out and sort of like shine that light on. Like all of the other books, Think and Grow Rich, they were all out there already. I think All the Chicken Soup for the Souls, all of that stuff. But The Secret, it was that movie. Did you ever see the movie?
No, because I read the book. And
the movie's cheesy. I love it, though. I do love it. I saw the movie first and then read the book.
Okay.
It pretty much follows it. But she's Australian. And it starts with, it's very dramatic of her walking on the beach and her life is in shambles.
Maybe I did see a bit of it.
Yeah,
you're
it's
right.
Very like, it was, you know, I don't even know how much they produced it for. I believe, honestly, Esther Hicks, another self-help guru, who I think is great, was asked to be a part of it and then thought, this is never going to make any money, and then wanted her name off of it, and then it made millions, and like she wanted her cut. But I don't even, there's like a lot of mixed stories, but it's, I think nobody thought it was going to be as big as it was. And I think it hit right at the time when we were transitioning. I know I was out here wondering why the fuck I was out here. I mean, I moved out here at 27, which I think is a very hard year. How old were you?
So 30.
Yeah, see, it's very difficult at that age because you've already had, like, my friendships were, like, really established back home. Like, at 27, between 27 and 30, you're, like, entering the next phase of your life, and you feel pretty settled in what you're doing. You feel comfortable where you're at, and the friends in your life at that moment are becoming your long-lasting, lifelong friends. Whereas in your early 20s, you're like, oh, my God, you like blue? I like blue. Let's get wasted.
Yeah.
Like, you're starting to now connect with people and have these relationships, and then I just picked up from, you know, the only place I've ever lived and came 3,000 miles out west. You came across the world.
Yeah.
And was completely and utterly fucking alone. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
How many
I did
times
2 years, I was, what the fuck am I doing here every day?
Every day, huh?
I almost went home. You know, I reckon I was 6 hours away from getting on a plane and going home.
Seriously?
Yeah.
How long were you out here with that?
Probably about 18 months. And I was low. And I rang my sister back in Australia, and she was the one who talked sense into me and just said, you've gone this far, you got to... And I'd already given it a bunch of cracks.
But 18 she said, months, too.
She said, another go. And I sucked it up, and it's really, really difficult because you get into this funk in your head and you lose your confidence and everything. And then I remember thinking, that I'll look back on it when I'm 50 and I will be just, I'll be so pissed off if I didn't give it the real shot that it deserved. And then a couple of things sort of unfolded, and then now I would be, if I went back to Australia, I'd be working in a factory, I'd be getting drunk every night. Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. I was like, what are you doing? I think we're both like 6 hours away from getting on a plane to Australia now. I think, but by the way, here's the thing. I mean, I'm so happy that you stayed. I'm happy that I stayed. I hated it here for 3 years. I did not want to be here at all. In fact, I came out here just on a 3-month trial. So I had my job, my bartending job in Hoboken.
But you've got that very East Coast versus West Coast thing that is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
And people miss that mentality of the East Coast. And they just want to go back.
They want to go back. You want to go back to, but it's more about just going back to what you know, what's familiar, what's safe.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was like, I don't need to be out here. I was doing comedy in New York. I was acting in New York. I mean, not a lot because there wasn't at that time that many, you know, that many things filming there. But I was like, I can still have a career there. And I could have, I really could have. But there's this weird thing that I'm glad I listened to. And it's happened a few times in my life. I actually remember crying to my mom on the phone. I'd only been out here a month, and I was crying to her as I'm sleeping on an air mattress in some dude's like house. It was a friend of my friend, her brother. It was like a, you know, friend of a friend of a friend. Very nice. But I'm like on an air mattress. I was bartending 2 days a week. The only thing they could give me was all this debt. And I was crying to my mom, and I'm like, I hate it here. Like, I hate everyone. Like, I hate everything. There's traffic. I was living in, like, Playa del Rey. So, you know, to get up to Hollywood, I was like, it's just terrible. My mom was like, come home. And I just go, I can't. Like, I actually felt like I knew I had to be here. There wasn't an option for me to go home. Even though I kept saying, I'm probably just going to come home. I never thought I'm going to pick up and leave. I kept thinking, okay, my goal was to get really successful and book a job back home, or to become bi-coastal. So that was my goal.
It's everyone's goal.
It's everyone's goal.
Come.
And when they start,
I'm going to do 6 months here and 6 months there.
Right.
That doesn't work.
Doesn't work, people. I mean, for a very select few, it works. But I mean, it took about 3 years until one day I turned around and I was like, oh, I really, okay, this isn't so bad. I have a really good group of friends now.
Yeah.
And I've got sort of a groove, and I'm in a part of a community. I think that's a really big thing.
You need to find your place.
You need to find your place. For anybody that's thinking about moving or it just moved, I think that is the first thing. And I know this from my friends that have moved. I have my friend Jana, who's a single mom, and she's moved from, you know, Chicago to Denver to Arizona, back to Denver. And every time she moves, she has that, like, I have to start again. First thing is first, find your pack.
Yeah.
Find your community of people.
Yeah.
You're going to need them. It's more important than anything else, because I know especially a lot of women are like, I got to get out there and start fucking guys. I got to meet someone. I got to get in a relationship. Sluts.
The whole town is designed for people to come here with their $30,000 saved up.
Oh, I didn't
have
that.
To throw it into headshots and acting school and whatever. Oh, you need this and you need that, and you'll need to pay for blah, 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 blah. Take your 30 grand, and a year later, you're left with nothing, and go home, go back to where you came from. The whole town is set up for that. And so, because I had to pay for a green card, you know, that cost me
$20,000. $20,000?
Isn't it outrageous?
It is. You know what my biggest regret is that I didn't fucking marry someone in my 20s. So that he could have his green card, because I met two guys that were like willing to pay me money, and I should have done it for two reasons. One, I could have used that money, and secondly, then I would have at least been married. Like, I swear to God, now that I'm in my 40s and I'm single, I mean, I joke about it.
How
on
much
stage,
money were they offering? Do you remember?
I think like $10,000 or something like that, and they were like fine guys.
Fine.
They were fine.
They were clean.
You know what I mean? Yes, totally. I was like, at that time, I was like, I was bartending and like nannying, and I was like, I should have done it, because I swear to God, a woman in her 40s that's never been married is worse than a woman in her 40s who's divorced. It just is. I don't know why there's a stigma attached to. No, a guy who's never been married is totally fine.
No,
and a guy
I'm
who's divorced is also fine, because then, like, at least he can commit. But a woman
who's never been married,
everyone's like, after a certain age, is suspicious. Like, my friend back on the
What's
East Coast
wrong with her?
Specifically told me that in Jersey that would be considered a red flag. It's a little bit less of a red flag here in LA, but I still think it's a red flag. I think people, I mean, they know what I do. So if you know what I do, it's a little bit less of a, like. But
maybe they just think that until they only need to talk to you for a minute, and then they'll realize that you're a not a crazy person.
Oh, that I'm just
absolute.
If I was crazy, I would have already been married. That's what
that's
I
true.
Say.
Crazy
if
people was, get married.
If I was crazier, if I was a little bit less stable, I guarantee you, I'd either be in a relationship, not a great relationship. I almost had a great relationship. I'd be in a relationship, and I'd probably be more successful in my career, because fucking crazy people seem to excel in life.
Yeah, to a point.
You know.
And then they get too crazy, and then you can tell in their eyes, and they're just vanished. Their craziness has taken them away somewhere else.
Then they grow a very thin mustache.
A very thin mustache, and they get arrested in cinemas sketching children.
So now you've been here 7 years, and you had those, like, those 18 months. I think you weren't even living in L.A. when you first moved out here, were you?
I was in Orange County, so I was driving up here, going to the shows and doing that. I was living with my sister, so at least I had family.
Yeah.
If my sister wasn't here, I wouldn't have lasted. I wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
It's too hard.
It is really difficult.
It's so fucking hard.
It's really hard. You know, this career just in general is hard. In fact, like whenever I talk to someone who's like, can you give me some advice? I'm thinking about moving out here and getting into this industry. I mean, your gut response is like, don't. Like, don't.
Mine's never don't, because you don't want to be that person.
Well, no,
but
I just say to them,
give it, but you have to go for it. This is, you don't just dip your toe in and go, that was fun.
No,
you
I agree.
You have to fucking drown other people in the pool.
You definitely
to get
do
what
have
you
to
want.
Kill. Definitely, you do. At the end of the day, though, I think I just tell them, you should definitely, especially if you're young, you know what I mean? You want to just try it, because you can always, you can leave it any time. But the thing is like, make sure that you really, really want it. I think some people get caught up in it, like, they're scared to admit that they haven't made it or failure, and they stay in it longer. They fall into a depression. It can lead. It's just, I've seen a lot of people stay in it longer than they should have.
If you, in comedy, and this is something that I'm just sort of grappling with in the last year or so, is for 15 years of my career, I think, like I said, I wanted to try political humor or something, mm-hmm. to impress someone in a suit in a building. And then just in the last 6 months, 18 months, I've realized that I don't give a shit about anyone's opinion except other comedians around me that I love and respect. And this was really interesting. About a couple of months ago, I did Just for Laughs showcase at the Lab in at the Improv, which is a horrendous room for comedy. And I did 5 minutes, and everyone hated me in the room. Hated me from the very beginning.
Every
time.
Every story I hear about it, and I've also auditioned for them several times. It's never a good showcase. No one ever has a good showcase, yet somehow everyone gets to go. But no one has a good showcase. Everyone's like, they hated me.
They hated me.
It's just something about when you showcase for anything. It's just always...
It's just terrible.
Brutal.
But the funniest part of the whole thing was, the room was silent. It was awful. And just from the back of the room, Justin Martindale going, ha! Like, knowing what I'm going through.
Oh,
and then
God.
At least I'm like, all right, I got a friend out there.
Yeah.
But this is what happened. So I had that awful 5 minutes, and I wanted to just leave. And I grabbed my stuff, and I laughed with Justin for a second. And then I walked out, and Joe Rogan walked up to me and said, Andrew Santino hasn't come for the spot in the main room. Do you mind filling in for 10 minutes? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So I go in there. I do exactly the same material that I just did in that shitty room, and I have a great set.
Right.
I wanted to knock the wall down and show everyone in the room,
see,
this is what happens. And then I thought, why do I give a shit about all those suits sitting in that room when Joe Rogan just came up to me and said, can you do me a solid and do this? And then thanked me afterwards and said, that was awesome, great. And I went, well, that's what it matters.
Yes.
That's what matters.
Yes, that's
doesn't
what
matter matters. What those suit people think. Joe Rogan thinks that I can do stand-up.
But also, you know you can do stand-up. At the end of the day, too, even if Joe Rogan didn't like your comedy for whatever reason.
Did he say something?
Yes.
And there's the comedian insecurity coming
fuck.
Out.
Anyway, let's change subjects. But even if he didn't, you know what I mean? Because, I've fallen down that rabbit hole, though, where I've been on stage, especially when I first got passed at the Comedy Store, and I was on stage, and all of the people that were already passed to stand in the back and sort of were like, let's watch the new girl who just got passed, and let's see what she's all about. And you feel that added pressure of, like, I have to be so fucking on right now. I've got to really fucking deliver.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you just feel like garbage, and you just want to, like, fucking, like, crawl under a rock. But at the end of the day, fuck them. Fuck those people. Fuck those people, those suits. Fuck those people at the showcase. It's what you think is funny. You know what's funny. The audience, you've made so many people laugh. Like, you know your shit is funny.
But that's back to the manifesting thing almost. Yeah. If you think it's funny and put it out there, the people that are going to like it are going to come to you.
Of course.
And you're going to build your audience. And, I mean, it's a very hard thing to really get a hold of because you still want everyone to love you.
You know what's interesting is, and I've been in years of therapy, that should come to shock nobody. nobody should be surprised by that statement. But good, healthy therapy. And I remember one of my therapists, we were talking and he was like, you need to stop caring. I mean, all therapists say this and all self-help books say it. You need to stop caring about, you know, the outside or like getting the outside approval.
Yeah.
The outward approval. It has to, you have to like yourself. You have to know that you're worthy, you're lovable, all of those things, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You have to know it doesn't matter what other people think. That's what we're taught. It doesn't matter. But for comedians, it does kind of fucking matter. We actually need that approval or else people aren't going to laugh.
Yeah.
So when we're on that stage, we are saying, you have to, oh, I need you to like me now. But then when I get off stage, I have to fucking switch and be like, and now I don't give a shit what people think about me.
Yeah, now
so
I don't care.
It's a hard switch. Also, with the manifestation, you know, when we're saying our things on stage and we're 100% committed to it, going back to what you said about the political humor and you didn't give a shit and the audience can tell that you don't give a shit, when you're genuinely connected, like when you're talking about how much you love your cat and how much I love mouth kissing my cat or all of that, whenever I'm selling it, that I like to fuck young guys, that whatever I'm doing, it's authentically me, so the audience laughs. Having said that, I'm sending that out into the universe every single night.
That she wants to fuck young guys.
Yes, that I only want to fuck young guys. That I'm, you know what I mean? So I did. I started saying this because I was like, well, what if those vibrations that I'm sending out, because I'm truly committed to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And if I believe in the, you know, that everything is energy and I'm sending it out constantly and I'm reaffirming, and I constantly keep saying, I'm single. I'm saying that over and over again. No wonder I'm still single. So
yeah,
I started to say on stage, which is true, I want to get married.
Yeah, yeah.
This is why. So as long as I'm putting it out there, so you know what I mean? So and it's the truth. I'm not lying about it. But it's interesting because, of course, you know, during, and you and I talked about it when I went on my MDMA journey.
Oh, yeah, I want to go on
that. That was one of the things that came up was, you know, as a comedian, you know, it's sort of self-deprecating humor, but we do this. We just point out what we think is, you know, our shortcomings, and we talk about it on stage, our insecurities, all of that, and we constantly do it over and over again. And because we're doing it over and over again, like, my mind is like, oh my God, I'm just like making those grooves, like,
well,
like
Rob Schneider told me to stop doing that. Stop being so self-deprecating.
Did he?
Yeah. It's a very Australian thing to be self-deprecating too. And I do it a lot. And he said, you've got to stop doing that. And I said, yeah, but it's kind of my thing. He goes, you don't have to lose it completely, but you need to stop it because you're actually just getting yourself in the mindset that you think you're shit or I'm not that good. Ah, I didn't go that well. Ah, no, I'm all right. Ah, I don't know what I'm doing. Ah, I'm an idiot. Ah, yeah. I'm just, you know. And
there's definitely truth to that because if you look at a lot of people that we know and a lot of people that, you know, are just greats in the industry, in any industry, actually. It's not just the entertainment industry, but for those of you out there that think, why the fuck does that asshole have that amazing job? He's garbage. He's terrible. But you know what? In his mind, he's fucking awesome. He like, the, you know those people that are just fucking, like, so just full of themselves, and they're just like, of course I'm going to get that. And they're just not qualified.
Yeah.
They're just super narcissistic. But they just, like, fucking climb up the company ladder, the corporate ladder, or they, you know, they're super successful. I joke around that this town tends to reward mediocrity. Or like, why is that person have their own television show? Like, they're okay, but they're not great. But in their minds, they're great. And that's
amazing.
Are
they miserable? Are they deep down miserable because they know they're kind of...
No, I think that's different. I mean, I think that it's a little bit of both, but I think you can be miserable with your life and maybe think, maybe I'm not worthy of love. But I think that when it comes to talent, all of those people are like, I fucking deserve this. I deserve it. I'm better than you, whether it's true or not. That's just what I've
seen. No, I agree with you. But that's I think that's one of the biggest downfalls of humanity, is people that think they deserve something. You don't deserve shit. You can earn and work for something.
Having said that, every self-help book says we're all worthy of that. We all deserve everything. I deserve I deserve to be married and to have a great career, as do you. We deserve it all. I understand what you're saying. It's almost like you're talking about...
I think the word deserve maybe is twisted in my head.
Right.
Because it probably has been morphed by millennials going, I deserve this.
Yes. No, there's there's the difference between that's where entitlement comes up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I deserve it because I'm sitting here taking pictures of myself and I'm not doing anything. Instead
you
of actually working on yourself as a person. Just because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're famous. It doesn't matter if you own companies and you're a millionaire. It doesn't matter if you're a waitress. It doesn't matter if you, you know, drive for Uber. You come home to you, even if you're in a relationship. Like, I learned that along the way where I had to, because I used to be that person that could never be sitting home. I always had to have roommates. I always needed to be around. I just never wanted to just be alone, like with my own thoughts and shit like that. And I eventually got to a place where I'm like, I love it. I really worked on myself and I think I'm a really good person. And I mean, there's a lot of shit that I could definitely improve on.
I've got a list. I brought it in.
All right. Yes. Is it alphabetically or?
Have you met, let's say, for lack of a better term, famous person who you think really has their shit together? Who has that shit together?
Yes, I definitely have, but...
Do you feel like naming them?
I'm trying to think, like...
Because we do meet a lot at the Comedy Store. There's, you know, you meet a lot of famous people, famous
right.
comedians, everything. And some I know, they're living a sham. They're driving in that car so that people can see
right.
them. They're doing that and they're very loud and they have to be, everyone's seeing them going, you're not... You're not in it, but there's a couple. Joe Rogan's very good. Rob Schneider's very good. They know themselves.
Yes.
And they're happy with
no.
themselves.
Oh, no, like, I know, you know, Howie Mandel
yeah,
is
Howie's
100%,
great.
You know, happy.
Do you want my funny Howie Mandel story?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I met Howie at the start of the year in the Third Street Promenade, bumped into him. And I said, oh, I'm a comedian, just introduced myself. And he was really nice.
So nice. He's the nicest human being.
He asked, oh, what have you been doing? And I said, this and that. And he said, oh, that's great. And we chatted for a while. And I've bumped into him a couple of times since and reminded him. And he goes, yeah, I remember you. How's things going? Everything like that. And I'm going, yeah, it's going really well. And so in his head, I've told him, you know, I'm doing these great things stuff. I didn't tell him the shit things that are going on. Why
right.
would I do that?
Right.
And so about a month ago, I was working for my sister. She runs a production company. So I've still got to do jobs on the side,
right.
I'll be honest, just to make the money that you need to live. And so I'm carrying coffees around. Like I'm an assistant in this production. And we're in this recording studio. And I walk around the corner and Howie Mandel is walking towards me and I've got a tray of coffees. And he didn't see me and I literally turned around and like threw the coffees like,
oh my God.
Down the hallway.
That's hilarious.
And then like walked back and I'm like, oh, hey, Howie. And he goes, oh, hey, what are you doing here? And I went, oh, I'm just, my sister runs a company. I'm just here, you know, helping out because and I went into this story that didn't exist. I said, oh, because we're traveling to Australia tonight and I was just helping her wrap things up because, you know, sometimes she needs some help with the last minute thing, and I was just digging this hole of lies.
As cups of hot coffee.
Just scalded someone.
You don't even know who was around that
corner. I don't know who was around the corner.
Some poor, like young receptionist has half of her face burnt off. She's had skin grafts now. She'll never know what even happened.
Oh, God. And I'm there casually, yeah, so we're flying out tonight. And I was just helping out because I'm so busy in the world of comedy doing my comedy, Howie, like that.
How many times did you use the word comedy in that conversation?
I would have loved to hear what I actually said because it was so manic. Like, oh, yeah, no, I'm just here doing the thing. And no, sometimes I come down and help because people like my accent and I make everyone at ease. Like, the shit that I was saying just made no sense. But he's there going, oh, okay, great. And if you got stand up, I go, oh, yeah, like so much. I'm going to do this and that. And then I was talking to my friend and then we just embellished it further because he left and I went, all right, I think I got away with it. But then we embellished the story to the point where like he could see that I was lying and I karate chop him and knock him out and I have him in a car and I'm going down the freeway like O.J. Simpson and the helicopters are above me and I'm like, I've gone too far. Like, I don't know how to get back from this.
That's going
to
be the next time you run into him. So like, honestly, like... What if we come out of the studio today and he's just like in the studio? It could happen. We're at the Rick G studio. He could be standing right outside right now.
I don't know. The way my story was going, I wouldn't be surprised if I just went and took him and said, all right, we have to go.
More importantly, did everyone get their coffee eventually?
Yeah, I had to go and buy more coffees that I threw down the hallway. Threw them down.
I can't believe it. That's amazing. He is a very nice man, though. He's on Funny You Should Ask a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's great.
He's great.
I've never shaken his hand because I don't think he likes it, so I never have. But I wonder if it's weird.
I've hugged him, though. No. He doesn't ever initiate that. But he's really just a good guy. And to answer your question, because you're like, do you know anyone who's super successful that has their shit together? And I truly believe that he does. Now, when he was our age, did he? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's a process. I don't know anyone. It's funny because as comics, it's like, you're working to find your voice. And when you start young in your 20s, you don't have a voice. Everything is very observational because you don't know your own voice.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of young comics in their 20s are observational comics. Like, don't you ever hate it? Or have you noticed? And then I'm going to do this. It's very not really personal stuff. They don't know who they are yet, which is totally fine.
Don't you find a lot of comedians and... I'm just going to say it. I think particularly women, they have this stance that they use at the start, like, I'm telling you how it is stance. And I go, that's not you. You don't stand like that. You're not being yourself.
No, I'm
and
always.
And as soon as I see a comedian who is standing like themselves, I go, oh, you know what you're doing.
It is definitely you. And here's the thing. There's nerves involved. A lot of people are insecure about their comedy, especially if they're first starting out. It's not just it's women. You notice it with women. I notice it with men, too. I notice it right away because I taught comedy for so long. So I would work. And you've been to my student shows. You know what I mean? You'd see them get on stage for the first time.
Yeah.
And I worked with them so long, so it didn't look like they were brand new. And because it's a dead giveaway when somebody is fiddling or fidgeting or they're doing the pee walk. It looks like they have to pee so bad. They're just moving back and forth. They're like whipping the cord around. So I literally knocked that out of them because it's a little fake it till you make it sort of attitude. It's like...
That's a big part of stand-up, though,
having the audience
confident in the person who's on stage.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Because here's the thing. Comics are so terrified of the audience, but the truth is the audience is more terrified of you, and no one wants you to be funnier than the audience. The audience
they don't want to feel embarrassed for you.
No, God,
they
that's
didn't
the
pay
worst.
To do that.
It is far worse for the audience when a comic isn't funny than it is for the comic. The audience wants you to say something funny. So it's that uncomfortableness that you see on stage. So just get up there and just do your shit. For any young comics, out there listening, like, trust me, they want you to be funny. No one's like, fuck these people, I'm not laughing.
Yeah.
Like, they came there to laugh, so make them laugh. You know what I mean?
And they want to hear your story, too. They really want to hear you. It's interesting that sometimes people can find their voice themselves after a year or two. They really can.
I'm always impressed. I have some young comics that I work with. Nikolai, who was in your Manny... I mean, he was 10 years old when I started working with him. His mom hired me she was like, he's going to do a talent show. So I was like, she's like, I heard you coach, do you coach children? And I had, but it's not my favorite thing to do. So I was like, so I was like, all right, I'll do it. It was a friend of a friend. So I go, she's like, he does impressions and stuff like that. And he's got this material. And we were just trying to get 3 minutes. And the more I talked to him and he was telling me stuff, I was like, holy shit. Like, this kid is so good.
Yeah.
Just his stories. Just him, like,
yeah,
and then this
happened.
And
then
he has something to say. And he was. His impressions were hilarious. It's just of his family members, which I love when you, like, impersonate your grandpa, your grandma. And he speaks Russian, too. So he was back and forth. And so I just looked at him. I go, how much material do you think you've got, like, enough? I think we'd have enough maybe for 6 minutes. And he was like, yeah. I go, if I booked you in a show that was in a restaurant but also held comedy so your parents could be there, you would be allowed to be there, would you want to do it? Now, I would never just be like, you're doing it. I wanted to make sure he felt comfortable. And he was like, oh, my God, so excited. His parents were over the moon excited. And he did it at Room 5 that was on La Brea at the time and crushed it.
Yeah.
He fucking... crushed it.
He opened for me at Brea.
I know.
It's a proper comedy club.
I know. He opened Comedy Store. He's done my show, The Comedy Store. He opens at, like, he does flappers. He does, all the improvs. I mean, I think now he's not doing it as much because he's in high school now, I believe. He's in high school. He's either a freshman. But he also books a lot of acting roles and stuff. He's very talented.
I would actually if I was his manager or something, I would make him take these years off comedy. He needs to experience, and then he can come back with better stories.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that skill set. I think whatever he does, he's going to be successful. But you're right. Some people, I'm working with this young girl now who just turned 21, and you know, she's been doing comedy less than a year, and I knew the second I met with her that she's got it. She has something. Not only does she have that the right personality to be in comedy, her life is so fucking interesting, and she's not just a 21-year-old or 20-year-old at the time. Ex-Mormon.
Yeah.
I mean, just everything about her life was just like, oh my God, this is just so great. Having said that, I've also worked with people that have taken my class that, you know, came across as sort of very like, oh, just another, you know, white guy in his early 30s or just another girl who's trying to seem tougher than she is. Cut to, they stuck with it 6 years later. Holy shit. Totally different person.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you saw me when I started at 24,
yeah,
I was like, so I get tan a lot, and like when you're peeling, it's like you're rubbing your boobs together. I mean, like, ugh.
That's good. That's
shit. Yeah,
like that. You were better when you were younger is what you're saying.
Yes, I was. Is what I'm saying. We should go back and look at those tapes because they're all on VHS.
I want to see you peeling boobs.
Peeling boobs. Oh my God. I did this whole act. I would do these act outs, and I thought they were hilarious. I would basically ask the audience. So this one part of this joke, I was like, I just got back from a cruise, and I was with my mom, and we saw the showgirl, and every time she wanted someone to clap, she'd raise her hands above her head and stomp her foot. And they clap. I go, so let's try it. And I would make the audience, I would command a comedy club audience to clap for me. I'm making them give me an applause break. And I made it a callback, which meant I would do it throughout my set if I didn't feel like I was getting enough. Like, that's how gross and thirsty I was as 24 comic. Now, having said that, I mean, comics that knew me when I first came out here, that saw me, and then, like, you know, you see years later, like, I obviously found my voice and stuck with it for the most part. But I also took a journey. I got more into sketch. I was already into improv. I went in that direction, my one-woman show.
Yeah.
All of those things brought me back into the stand-up world. I think there are some people that are absolutely born a comic. Born a comic, either a comedian or a comedic writer, but they are born a comic.
Yeah, but they can fade out real quick too.
No, they can. But I think I was born a performer.
I think I was too. Yeah.
Yes, I believe you were too. And there's nothing wrong with that. I look at someone like Eliza, and Eliza's one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
If not, you know, she's my best friend.
Yeah.
But the second I saw her on stage for the very first time, she was born a stand-up comic. I mean, she does a million other things. She's an actress. She's a host. She, you know, is a producer, a director. She's a writer. She's amazing at whatever she like tackles. But at the core, she's a comedian. It's really, and I, at the core, I first started, you know, I think my parents realized I was a performer at a very young age. I was in gymnastics, and they said, watching me perform the little floor routines, but I was with, like, teenagers. I had my own coach. I was, like, a really good gymnast.
Yeah.
But I loved the part where I got to perform. It wasn't even about being athletic. I just loved performing, and they put me into other things where I would perform, and then I eventually got into singing, and that was the first thing I did. I sang. I toured. I sang. And it led me to every other aspect of this industry, you know what I mean? Into writing, into comedy, into acting, you know, brings you all the way back around. But
I think that the performance part of my stand up is how I sell it. I don't think my writing's overly spectacular.
Neither, no, I'm just kidding.
No, it's true. But
no, your writing is great.
The reason that I don't think that my writing is that great is because I tell people jokes beforehand on stage and I go, what do you think about this? And it just gets nothing, no reaction or anything. And I go, yeah, but watch how I can sell it on stage. And I sell it and it gets way more.
Right.
And so I know that I know how to perform something a lot better than have the crazy, meticulous writing skills of John Mulaney.
That's fair. Yes.
Something like that.
That's fair, for sure. I mean, it is one of those things where, especially when you're first starting, do you remember when you're first starting, it's like you have to consciously turn that on. Now, for someone who comes from a performance background, I always say there are pros and cons to, if you're thinking about doing stand-up, to have, like, somebody's like, oh, I've never been on stage. I've never done anything on stage. Well, there are pros and cons to that. The pros are Well, no. Let's start with the cons. The cons are, you don't know how to, if you've never been a performer, you don't know how to mask all of those nerves. You know how scared you got like the first time and several times after.
Yeah.
As a performer, if you've already been acting on stage or doing any other kind of performing, whether you're singing or acting, you know how to mask those nerves. Now, the pros are, if you've never been on stage, is that you're authentically going to be yourself. Because when I first started, treated it like a play almost. And I was like, this is me playing the part of a stand-up comedian.
I see that a lot.
Projecting.
I'm currently doing a comedy performance.
I am from New Jersey. Can you hear me in the back? Yes. So you're performing.
And this is how jokes go, and this is the cadence that they end with.
For someone that doesn't have a performance background, they are authentically being themselves.
Yeah.
They don't know how to be anything else. So the jokes are actually coming out how they would naturally tell a story, which I think works the best. And it took me years to sort of break through that you're performing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes I just dial it in and I just like go on autopilot and I'm just in a performer mode.
I think that's probably some of the best advice you could give someone starting out is that I want to hear your story. I really do. You might think, oh, but I didn't grow up in a monastery or something. There's nothing interesting about it. Yes, there is. There definitely is.
Yes.
It's something stupid. Everyone. I had a, you know, whatever your story is. I have this teddy bear really? You're ridiculous and insane. That's hilarious. There's something. You got to find what that is and what you want to talk about and talk about that.
Agreed.
And that's, you know, authentic self.
All right, we had to wrap up because that just flew by. But I want you to tell everyone out there, everyone, where they can find you.
In the bushes.
In the back of a movie.
Outside
Jody's
house.
In the back of the Lion King theater.
Sketching. Where you can find me. I don't know. Around town. Should I be more specific?
Like on social media, maybe?
I don't know. My name's Monty Franklin. You can figure it out.
Monty with a Y.
What? Who has Monty without a Y? Kind of weirdo. M-O-N-T-E.
I-E.
Oh, get fucked. That's not a thing.
It's a
That's
thing.
That's how they name my cup at Starbucks, because they like to be different.
No, do you know why they do that? Because they know that you're a millennial. Bam!
What, and they think I want an I-E at the end of my name?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, fuck that. M-O-N-T-Y, like Monty Python, and then Franklin, like Benjamin Franklin.
Thank you.
So enjoy looking up Python Benjamin and going, what the fuck was he talking about?
Honestly, guys, if you've never seen Monty perform,
don't see it.
Just save all that money. Go drinking. It's pretty much the same thing.
Oh, I'll go drinking with you.
He'll do that. Call him up. Just send him a DM and he'll go drinking with you.
Yeah.
No, find him on social media. Check out some of his stuff. If he's coming to a city near you, please check him out because he's hilarious and just a great guy.
Uh-huh.
I'm
a they.
And he's a they. If you approach him, it's a they.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fuck that up. You can find me at Jody Miller Comic all across the board. And of course, stay tuned for the next episode. This is Jody Miller. Don't call me ma'am. Don't fucking call me ma'am.
This has been a Global Story Network production.